podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. Now that we are finally hitting the Thanksgiving Feast Week trail, I am your co-host, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Mr. Adam Murray. Adam, I have to start with one question. Since we've convened on this podcast, what is your favorite Boston Celtics loss?
Well, given between the Bucks and the Cavs, the Cavs was a horrible, freak injury in 5 minutes, and the team just sort of battled back, from that gut wrenching. But the one was a back to back loss.
Well, this was a trick question because they haven't lost since we did a podcast, since we did our last recording.
It's been that long.
Critical alert from Microsoft.
Well, I mean, we could just jump into it if you like, unless you want to just do our typical back and forth morning chat before we get into the nitty gritty of the NBA season. But we do have a lot to cover. We missed a week because of things that got in the way. But we're back here to sort of catch up on a lot of regular season stuff. The story of the whole of the league so far has been the 15 game winning streak of the Boston Celtics. 0-2. Kyrie Irving made the comment. Can you say what exactly he was quoted as saying? Can you say it, or?
I don't.
Would you rather leave it unsaid?
Best leave it unsaid.
Inspiring words, though, huh? Not exactly the thing that inspired them to start playing better, but just like a tremendous irony.
Yep.
And then just rattling off win after win. Let me ask you this. I don't have all the wins in front of me by the Boston Celtics. I can pull it up really quick. Were there any of those wins so far? Because, there's always a stumbling block here, a stumbling block there. I've seen a couple with the Atlanta Hawks where it looked a little dicey. Have there been any of those wins where you said, man, that probably should have been an L, but they played really hard and they just kind of pulled it out?
It's just most of the games are like that. It's just like, how do they keep winning? How does, Al Horford get this miracle layup at the end? How does Kyrie get this open three? It's just there's good teams somehow find ways to win and bad teams somehow find ways to lose. And it's just Brad Stevens is a wizard. There's just some full-on wizardry going on because there's no reason that team, even on paper, even just watching them, should be – I don't know how you go from being terrible on offense to being all of a sudden like the most defensively sound team. It's like they're just the hustle.
I've got the numbers here. They're 22nd in scoring, 27th in field goal percentage, 17th in three-point field goal percentage, and 14th in threes. When you look at just that side, the offensive side, Adam, that's pretty bad. Like you look at that and you're like, man, that's like Memphis Grizzlies bad. Then you look at the other side of the coin, like for the other things. Third in turnover rate, meaning they don't turn the ball over a lot at all. They're ninth in free throws made. You got to give a lot of credit to Kyrie Irving on that one. He just has this gift of getting to the line by being shifty and making people, get off track with their bodies so that they have to foul. But here's the big one. First in points allowed, first in field goal percentage defense, second in allowing three-point shots. Like where did the defense really come from? I mean, do you think that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown combined with their wingspan and how Jaylen Brown has really blossomed into like a true good NBA wing, do you think that that's been one of the big indicators, or do you think there's something else to it? Because the rebounding was another huge problem for Boston, and now they're third in the league.
It's not, the 15 minutes of Aaron Baines and the 25 minutes of Morris. It's just pure wizardry where their number one defensive guy, who was supposed to be the jewel of the trade, Jay Crowder, just looks – he does not look good in Cleveland at all. And then, Evan Turner, he was great in Boston. All of a sudden, okay, Portland has him. Hey, he's not looking so good. And it's just this weird Popovich Spurs. You're great here. Then all of a sudden, you leave, you wither, and then new guys come in, and they're like, where,
Well, you're I think you're a very realistic Celtics fan. I think when it comes to you as like when you balance it between, you know, being this very official podcast host and NBA expert, and then just being a fan of your local team, that you have a really good like schism of, okay, this is – I'll put my fan hat on. I'll put my analyst hat on. Let me ask you this then about Kyrie Irving. When you watch him as a Celtics fan, have you sort of had a change in perception about Kyrie versus what you saw out of Cleveland? Do you think you've seen something out of him that you just did not expect, whether it be defensively, offensively, being a leader? Is there something different that he's brought to the team that sort of sparked this winning streak?
I don't think so. I think it was more of, oh, yeah, you could see LeBron sort of, you know,
delegating him.
Yeah, you ran. Okay, hey, you could have a few plays, but in the end, yeah, make sure I get the ball. Make sure I, you know, it goes through me, as opposed to Kyrie. You know, I'll do what I want. I'll pass it around, but it's still, I'm going to take all these shots. As opposed to, nope, you gotta still defer. And it's you know, would he get the same from Isaiah Thomas? Probably. He'd still have the same 3-point shooting and crazy stats. The defense. Yeah,
Kyrie's had some big ones. He had 35 against the Hawks in one game. I mean, in terms of the wizardry, like on the court, you talk about the coaching wizardry. The wizardry on the court, he had this one against the Lakers that was like viral in a hurry, where he literally went through the entire team, all five guys off of like some Harlem Globetrotter shit, and just went right to the lane for a layup. That was a big blowout win against the Lakers. But let me look at the close ones here since that's happened. Miami, they beat them by 6 back in the right before Halloween. Atlanta twice almost got them. They kind of had I remember they had big deficits in those games, and they sort of just climbed back into it. Am I saying that correctly?
Oh yeah, Atlanta was up 15 after the first
twice.
Quarter and
yeah, both times. And Toronto, they beat them by 1. I can't remember that game too clearly. Do you remember that one?
That was the last second shot, I believe, to win it. And it was,
but the marquee one has been the TNT game on Thursday night against the Golden State Warriors. That had the feeling of a playoff game, and I'll say it in this way because I know it's November. People will probably forget about this game in 3 months. It was the kind of game where, just like most playoff games, people are tight in the first 3 quarters, low shooting percentage, teams just don't seem to be in a good flow. And then in the 4th quarter, there's a lot of lead changes, the stars start to make the shots, and the Celtics just came up with more stops than the Warriors did down the stretch, and that's how they won the game.
Yeah, and then, you know, I remember I was out and didn't see the game, and you're like, you know, you type, oh, hey, well, Golden State sort of blew it by not making shots, and it's like, okay, then I watched the replay. It's like, oh, no, that was the Celtics playing crazy defense, and then just constantly switching and being in their face. When for a team like Golden State that just passes, all of a sudden, now wherever they go, you have all these players with crazy wingspans who are getting in your face. It's a lot different.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown did a tremendous job in that game. Had to deal with, I think a tragedy. I think a friend of his had died.
Best friend just died, and he wanted to take the game off. And
played great. Would you call it a poster dunk on Kevin Durant, or was it more kind of like a slide through where Durant was trying to contest, but it was too late to plant his feet, and Brown just happened to be over him when he dunked it? It wasn't necessarily a poster.
It was a slide through.
But I mean, Jaylen Brown, just give me your thoughts on him and Tatum, because a lot of people sort of kind of bundle them together because they're both wings.
Well, it's, you know, Jaylen Brown, you're starting, what, you know, I forget who had written about it, but you're starting a 6'7" kid with a 7-foot wingspan at the 2 spot. That's something you don't see ever, and he could actually keep up with the shooting guards. He's not a step slow, and he you know, like Jason Tatum, both have super high basketball IQs and know where to be on the floor. And it's just, you know, there was a story I think on The Ringer about, you know, how Philly needed luck and everything, and you know, the picks went the wrong way, their team could be totally different. And let's just go back to, remember when the Celtics tried to trade 4 first-rounders to get Justice Winslow?
Yes, I do remember that.
Imagine how, if you had Justice Winslow, they wouldn't need Jaylen Brown, who's also a 3, so they probably would have gotten Chris Dunn or somebody.
What if they did the Paul George deal, after all?
Or they did the Paul George deal, or they did the Jimmy Butler deal. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, one of those things where all these chips somehow fall, and you have Tatum and Brown who play you know, just smart, unselfish ball. And, you know, we're going to talk about how, you know, these super teams in Cleveland and Oklahoma City are sort of floundering now and just have unselfish ball. You know, who cares? As opposed to, well, I'll take this play. You'll take the next play.
Is Danny Ainge raising his hand in epic victory with the Tatum pick? Or do you still feel like there's time to regret that with not getting Fultz or not getting the two or three guy in front of Tatum, which I think was Josh Jackson, and I can't believe I'm drawing a blank. Who was number two in the this most recent draft? Lonzo Ball. I mean, do you think that
Ball
or
Fultz?
Yeah,
like Josh Jackson. Well, Josh Jackson should be. You know, that's another...
Granted, the Suns are playing a little harder. Devin Booker's had some 30-point games in a row.
Yeah, but still, that team doesn't look like it has much of a future if you're, you know, on the Greg Monroe rental. Hey, we got a pick for him. And
he's playing, but didn't they just give up 140-plus points to the Rockets on that flip side?
Yeah, and it's just, well, good job, agent. I could have gone to Boston, but instead you wanted me in Phoenix because I'd get more minutes. Yeah. And, well, now, you know, I started at the four, which we got blown out because I'm not a four. And then all of a sudden, now I'm playing 20 minutes off the bench because Warren and Chris are now back in the starting lineup.
Yeah, and they want to go with that smaller three-ball lineup with Jay Triano coaching the team. So you're seeing Chris do a lot of, like, corner threes on some stuff. And Monroe's sort of – I wouldn't call him outdated because he played well for the Bucks in that playoff series against the Raptors. I think he's useful for a certain team. But, I mean, what a bad fit. I mean, I agree with you about – the agent from Monroe probably should have tried a better way to angle something else because it's just not a good fit. I do agree with that.
Yeah, just quickly, is he raising his hand? No. It's mostly, you know, okay, now we see why you wanted Tatum so bad. It's just more of what is Philly doing with Fultz? Why is he shooting left-handed? Why is he, you know... Ben Simmons like sprains his ankle in preseason. You shut him down for the entire year, and all of a sudden, oh no, you're fine. It does, you know, you're shooting sort of underhand now. Oh, you could go out and play. Like, what is you know, what is up with Philly's doctors? Yeah. And
well, let's move to Philly because we have a couple of things that we can unwrap with the gift that the Philadelphia 76ers have given us because they've been a fairly would you call them the most entertaining team in the league, or would you kind of give that to maybe someone like the Thunder who have been a little bit toxic even though they're pretty good when their stars are playing well, or do you have kind of another team on like not on my radar here that you would say is more entertaining than the Sixers?
No, it's the Sixers right now who are the, you know, the you know, Embiid, and you know, talk what you want about the process, which is you know, they're all patting themselves on the back for sacrificing 4 years of their lives, and you happen to get lucky by having, you know, Embiid getting injured and falling to three and then taking the 2 years off, Simmons having to take a year off, but you whiffed on Okafor, you whiffed on Noel.
Yeah, Okafor, they literally cannot even trade him. Nobody wants him. He's, you know, and I don't think Dario Saric has gotten that many minutes unless I'm just not paying close attention to their depth chart. Am I crazy?
No, Saric is getting minutes, but they've seemed to have he's not the focal point now. He's now the third option.
I'm looking at it now, and he got 25 in a game to lead the team against the Jazz, which was a win. So,
you know, he's getting his things, but it's just the Simmons and Embiid show. And, you know, I had said in the previews, you know, people have forgotten about Ben Simmons and how good he really was. And, you know, you saw it firsthand, you know, he was how hard he'd play in the non-conference games and against the good competition. Says all of a sudden, oh, now I have to play against SEC. No, I don't want to play against them. I don't care. I'm just...
That whole LSU campaign was just a walking disaster. And I think a lot of people knew it from Jump Street. You know, what you thought of his comments about the NCAA being like, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was like to the vein that like the NCAA is cancerous, you know, to college basketball.
Well, that's just where he was and his situation. And you want to say for him, yeah, it kind of was because he had to take a year off.
Only played a semester or only went through a semester.
Well,
but
that's what they all do.
It was just a rocky year, his 1 year at LSU, just like Fultz's was. But the efficiency was there. You could see he was super talented. He's basically playing point guard, you know, even though they don't run they don't really run point guard sets for Ben, but I'll say this. When you watch highlights, man, Ben Simmons has the ball a lot. They just let – Brett Brown just lets him roam, you know, which kind of lends to a lot of the entertainment that the Sixers provide. And then there was the Joel Embiid explosion against the Lakers where – against Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. Embiid went for 46 and 15. Along with Ben Simmons getting 10 assists. Really, really, just a tremendous performance with Kevin Hart right there in the front row cheering him on.
And this, again, as much as, you know, again, LeVar Ball is just killing the kid.
I don't want to talk about Lonzo Ball. I know he got the triple-double, and he was like the youngest player to ever get a triple-double. That was, okay, fine. That's, you can have that. But his shooting's awful. When... You can never walk away from your team in an altercation. You got to get in there and break up the fight, you know, or stand up.
That could go either way. I could see that you have to get in there. And I also have to say, you know what? Don't get in trouble. Don't. You know.
Yeah, but at least just get a hand in there like, hey, hey, hey. You know, that's all you got to do. You know?
Or just don't look completely disinterested and put your head down.
Yeah.
I think that was just the way he sulked back.
Like, look at the polar opposite with LeBron where, I mean, he was just – man, that's a longer story where he was playing the Mavericks, and after the game, he made a comment that a guy that he had practiced with when he was younger, Dennis Smith Jr., who he's high on, LeBron is. LeBron made a quote that he felt like the Knicks made a mistake, which Frank Ntilikina took as a dig. So when they played the Knicks a couple nights later, Ntilikina had no problem, you know, just kind of getting in LeBron's face. Well, LeBron is a guy who you just don't want to piss him off. Well, Enes Kanter has sort of gained a reputation as a guy you don't want to piss off either. So he's sort of getting in LeBron's face right after the Ntilikina altercation, and it almost blew up into a fight. I don't know if it was actually – I don't think anybody was coming to blows there, but it got pretty heated. But not ironic. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that – LeBron wound up having a pretty big game because you just don't want to make that man mad.
Well, you don't want to make the man mad, and also at the same time, the problem is he's also still playing 45 minutes a game, every game.
But that's the thing about Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball's got to fucking get mad. He's got to go out there and just say, man, fuck all this. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to play my ass off.
Well, the thing is, he's not the leader of the team.
Yeah, but this is a lost season. You can try
it's
to
It's a
be-
lost season, but you could try to start making your mark, but... He has no desire to be the leader of the team. He's content being the Scottie Pippen to, you know, Ingram's Jordan. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't think we should be faulting him for, well, you don't have that killer instinct. Not everybody wants to be that guy. Mm-hmm. Not everybody wants to be that in your face. Some people just want to be, okay, I want to get better. Look at Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan was never that guy. So it's just, but quickly just going back to Philly.
Yeah.
They're extremely fun to watch, but at the same time, we all know they're just one play away from just an injury of just taking that team apart again.
Well, they fall apart in terms intangibly. Like when you watch the team, they look good when things are going well, but the moment things start to spiral, you can almost see it. Like, oh, they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to make a play. They don't know how to stop a big run in the second half if it gets thrown at them.
Well, that's the thing is, good teams know how to win. They're too young to know how to pull it off. So, you know, you gave that 1-year deal to J.J. Redick to, okay, let's teach these guys a winning culture. Same thing with Amir Johnson, who has no, you know, he's back to playing 10 minutes a game now.
Mm-hmm.
He was starting and all of a sudden disappeared, and now he's like getting, you know, DNPs all the time, and you know, and then, you know, there's Robert Covington, who now has that huge contract.
What do you think of that contract? Now, there's a little bit of details that we have to flesh out before we talk about the exact salary, is that Robert Covington was in a situation where they have his Larry Bird rights, so they were going to be able to at least go somewhere over the cap in order to keep him. Now, the Sixers aren't in that situation yet, but we already know that they're going to be in a big-time pitfall in the next few years when they have to extend Ben Simmons because of the fact that they just gave the process slash Joel Embiid a really, really big extension. So they're already kind of staring down shrinking cap space. So what it was is that Covington was in a situation where either you renegotiate and extend him within the next year, or you risk losing him in the open market to free agency, kind of like similar to what happened with Jordan Clarkson with the Lakers and what happened with Gilbert. I mean, it's not the Arenas rule because I don't think he would have been a restricted free agent unless I'm looking at it wrong. But Covington probably would have made more money if they had waited to let him go on the open market than if they just got a deal done. And the Sixers, I guess, just felt like, okay, we got to get this done before we get to the 2018 so we could just wrap it up. But it does on paper look like an overpay. Would you feel like it's an overpay?
No, it has the – he has become sort of that quintessential 3-and-D guy. Because he was the only guy on that team for all those years, and they never drafted a three. They never drafted a three. They were just drafting centers every year. And then all of a sudden, you know,
finally got a point guard.
By default, he's getting playing time. And so now he's NBA defensive, you know, he should be a defensive all team player this year. And
he's in that metric category for sure.
Yeah, so well there's nobody there, so let's lock him down. With the way the salaries are going, you have, like I said, Redick had $23 million this year. Amir Johnson has $11 million. Well, we need to hold out some money for Simmons in two more years.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just get Covington in the books. Let's have our starting three locked down.
Okay.
And
is it a trade? Does it, like I always say this, the Nene passing the Nene test, which Danny Lurie coined? Is it a tradable contract?
Of course it's a travel contract because he's good.
Yeah, averages 16 a game right now.
He's deceptively good.
Five rebounds. I mean, yeah, you're right about that one.
He's deceptively good, and there is no real backup to him. It's just, you know, you have Korkmaz, Timothy Luwawu, who are their twos, who aren't really – A, they're not doing anything, and B
– My problem with the Sixers when I look at them is that they're just not very deep. Like when I look at these teams that could be the future and all that, those teams, a lot of times I look at them and they say, man, there's a couple of pieces there behind them that might be good. Obviously, there's the Markelle Fultz mystery because he's only played four games. He hasn't looked that impressive. If he starts to show up, then you know you might be looking at some depth. But right now, it's really Embiid, Simmons, Covington, Redick, and then Saric, and it's nothing.
That's the thing is, they've done nothing to develop a bench. They've done nothing to, really, I guess, make themselves deeper.
We like
TLC,
but he hasn't shown it yet. So,
and then also, if you're, you know, they're still hoarding top picks. So, what's going to happen next year? When you have the top five players, let's say, you know, Michael Porter Jr., well, do you want to go to Philly? No, I don't want to go to Philly because there's no spot for me there. Where am I going to get playing time?
Go ahead.
You're going to have agents who are going to start pulling their players from them like they did with the Celtics. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm stumbling over your words. No, finish your point.
So it is not an easy fix going forward. You had to give him money because, well, he's sort of been the one rock, and if you lose him, they don't really have a plan B, or they've developed nobody other than their top picks. And they haven't – have they really developed them? Or, you know, that's the question.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like Simmons and Embiid have sort of taken a leap yet, or at least Joel Embiid? I mean, Ben Simmons is a rookie, but we know this. He's a second-year rookie, sort of a red shirt. Do you feel like they've taken that leap, or do you feel like there's still a lot of room to grow for both of them? I think Embiid may have peaked. I hate to say that. But...
Well, of course Embiid's peaked. We know what he could do. Mm-hmm. It's just we need to see that over 36 minutes a game every game.
Mm-hmm.
We know he can put up, there's not much more he can do. It's just, well, he does that in very limited stretches.
Yeah, which makes his efficiency sky high because of the fact that he's got the limited minutes, but he's got such great numbers.
Yeah, and Simmons, he can't shoot. He's doing everything without a jumper right now.
His field goal percentage is good, but it's because he's
layups.
Attacking the basket, yeah, which is good.
It's layups and...
But it shows maturity for a young player. Like I'm going after this, you know, because a lot of people sometimes in the NBA, people look at the numbers of like how many outside shots and how many mid-range shots you take and how often you go inside the paint, and people watch the games and they think when a guy is going into the lane or going into the paint to try to get a basket, it's like, oh, that shows immaturity. He's not settling for an easier shot. He's just trying to get the best shot he can. It's like, no, that's maturity now in the NBA. That's the way to go. You know, the mid-range shot is the easy way out. That's the shot you want to avoid now. That's what coaches try to keep you away from.
But the NBA is ever changing, and now, you know, with these with Tatum and a mid range jumper sort of coming back into Simmons, and then big men are finding a home again. Where, you know, if you're a big man, you're gone. But now, well, if you're at least agile and
you can go to Charlotte where they are 6-9.
They're all shooting threes now. So if you're a big man, as long as you know how to shoot a three, you're golden. But okay, moving on.
Let's talk about a team that looks vanilla on paper, like we're talking about these mid-range and just kind of play your game. But they've actually really produced in terms of the win-loss, and that's the Detroit Pistons. Let me ask you this. I'll throw some numbers at you in a minute. When you watch the Detroit Pistons, what have you noticed that's different other than the new arena?
It's usually, why am I watching the Pistons? Oh, wait, they're it's really just Avery Bradley, I think.
You think Bradley's been the X factor?
They've seemed to have become a completely different team, and we had said if Jackson comes back at full speed, they should be a better team. It's just they were woefully unexciting, and then, you know, Tobias Harris now not being crowded by
more. I'm gonna say this about Reggie Jackson: his numbers are about the same. The difference is they have another guard to go to in case Jackson hits the shits. That's the difference.
You have another guard to go to who also plays defense, as opposed to Caldwell Pope, who, well, he would shoot, but he didn't really do anything else. And, you know, just a quick aside about him, he hasn't really been lighting it up in L.A. either.
No, he's really kind of been toiling a little bit. I mean, it's easy to get lost in that L.A. team right now. There's just no leadership. We'll talk about the Lakers another day.
Chances like that, it's like, well, nobody cares. You have a, you know, like Covington. Hey, you're on this completely dead team that nobody cares about. Put in your minutes and become that guy. And, you know, call a post. And all of a sudden, you know, but just Detroit, Bradley has made this a more of a unit team. Drummond has found his fountain of youth, apparently.
He's looked more consistent offensively and defensively. Like, it's not one where he's just getting the rebounds and the steals. He's now getting blocks. He's getting I think I saw him get a 20-point game not that long ago, unless I'm dreaming it. The other thing I'll say about Detroit, sneaky deep. Like, we were just talking about how the Sixers don't seem to have the depth. When you look at Detroit, Stanley Johnson's played well. Ish Smith's field goal percentage is outrageous as the backup point guard. Luke Kennard's played well. Henry Ellenson's gotten minutes. Langston Galloway is a third-tier point guard, but, you know, they signed him to do that. And then Tobias Harris was, like, on fire to start the season, if you remember.
That seems to be it. Replacing Morris for Johnson and allowing Tobias to be that four, since Drummond's an anchor. You can't have an anchor and then Morris be an anchor too. So it sort of spaced them out a little bit. And it's just, you know, like, yeah, like you said, this, the team, although their numbers don't appear to be that way, and you're like, oh, well, Reggie Jackson's numbers are down, but it's just watching him play, he's a different player than before.
This, just an aside, the Celtics-Pistons trade, was that a win-win, or do you have regrets for Boston? I mean, you can't predict the Gordon Hayward injury. You just can't predict that. But do you feel like – because the truth is, if they don't do the Hayward signing, it doesn't pave the way for the Kyrie Irving trade, which is what made the team what it is now. So you can't go all the way back like that. But do you feel like that the Pistons only won out on this deal, or do you feel like the Celtics kind of won – Marcus Morris isn't lighting the world on fire, but he's not exactly bad.
Well, I'm going to sort of cheat and say, well, Aaron Baines signed with the Celtics, so it's essentially Bradley for Morris and Baines. And Baines,
gotcha,
has been a defensive just beast that the team has not had for how many years now, where he's just, I will go down, I will be the rebounder, mm-hmm, I'm just going to sit there and have people run into me all day.
Yeah, they haven't had that since the Doc Rivers days.
So I would say it's definitely a win-win since Jaylen Brown has been.
But Bradley has fit well in Detroit. That was the most important thing. Sometimes with these trades, you're just not sure. Like, we're going to talk about Oklahoma City in a second. But with Bradley, it just felt like he fit in perfectly. His role was niched out very quickly under Stan Van Gundy. They knew what he could do. He had enough inventory in Boston to see, okay, he can play the two. He can handle the ball if we need him to, if our point guard can't do it. But he's more of a defensive guy. He's an athlete. He can get leak outs. He can stop the best guard on the other team. They knew exactly what he could do, you know. And then with Drummond and Harris, I don't have their schedule in front of me. I don't know how many good teams they've actually beaten in the process. I know one of their losses was against the Milwaukee Bucks. But do you feel like that's a sustainable amount of success for Detroit? Like, do you feel like they could go to maybe being a 50-win team in the East?
In the East, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're still you're still in the same conference as Chicago, so that's just a.
Now you're staring at the abyss. You're looking at the Bulls, and I know there's another just god awful team down there in the East that I'm not even thinking.
Bulls, Atlanta, Brooklyn, Atlanta, although better still bad, Charlotte.
Now my boy Dwayne Dedmon is playing well. Okay, he's not going to be traded anytime soon because he just signed a contract there. But if you're a fantasy guy, Dwayne Dedmon's your man if you can get him.
Yeah, but there's. Outside of fantasy, not much hope in that team.
Okay, let's talk about the teams that made the big trades like we were talking about. We'll start with two, and they're kind of on different sides of the coin right now, at least as the time being. It might change rapidly through the season, like a lot of things do. The Oklahoma City Thunder. When you look at them on paper, I'm looking at these stats here. They're first in steals, they're 11th in blocks, they're 6th in point differential, which I'm going to tell you this, Adam. Point differential to me is a really good indicator of how good or how bad your team actually might be, because it just shows night after night how much better are you than the teams that you play, no matter how good or how bad they are. And they're plus 5.4 points, so they're 6th. 3rd in points allowed, 2nd in field goal percentage defense, they're 12th in three-pointers made. But – and you look at those numbers and you watch them play sometimes, you're like, man, that's a really impressive team. You got Melo. You got Paul George is getting 30 and 40-point games. Russell Westbrook is still a beast. But they're just not – it just doesn't look like it's working. Like, can you put a finger on it?
It's a curious case there. Everybody was so quick to, you know, Westbrook's the MVP last year. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All of a sudden, Cantor leaves. Yeah, that kid, you know, he could play. Oladipo leaves. Hey, he's sort of anchoring the Pacers team.
What about Sabonis?
Sabonis, hey, he's alive. and everybody who came to Oklahoma City just Melo. Oh yeah, he's scoring, but he's not good, and he's out of position as a four. George, well, he's scoring, but he's not really. I think
George has really helped their defense. Their defense was already okay in the Westbrook MVP season, but I feel like George has kind of sustained it to keep it good, especially with the steals, because when you have a 6'9" small forward, that's like or 6'8", whatever he is now, that's a tremendous value. But let me ask you this about Melo. Do you like Hoodie Melo? Do you like the Carmelo Anthony that – he relegates sometimes, but then there are those moments where it's like, okay, I got to get mine. I got to get this three off. You know, I got this curl screen. I got to take the shot because that's just how I'm built. Like,
well, Hoodie Melo is just awesome to watch because he's Hoodie Melo. It's just outside of those three, there's nobody. You would just mention there's nobody. There's no bench. There's nobody. Steven Adams.
He's had some injury issues so far.
He's had an injury, but he's the one who's suffering the most from it. Okay. Andre Roberson, you know, will never touch the ball ever.
They cannot put him late in games because they're just going to hack him because he's such a bad free throw shooter. That's the other problem.
And the problem is nobody else is going to be inspiring you. Raymond Felton, Patrick Patterson, who, you know, hasn't done much there. It's just, well, it's those three guys, and it's Billy Donovan who hasn't. Which, you know, 15 games is too, you know, I always.
Tell you this. I've heard rumors about Alvin Gentry down here in New Orleans. So I'm not saying Billy Donovan's in trouble, but you never know sometimes.
I didn't say he's in trouble. I just said
when the urgency kicks in, it can get tough, you know.
I would say, you know, 25 games is a good time to sort of get your meshing, your team down. But it's up to the coach. We mentioned the Celtics. Oh, well, you know, the coach is just doing these crazy things. Donovan's just like, go. It doesn't seem, I don't want to say there's a lack of urgency there. It's just he doesn't seem willing to bend to these new his new team.
Was there a game that the Thunder had where, like, I mean, they had that Spurs game on ESPN where they had a big lead, they blew it, and the Spurs just sort of Spurs them into a 104-101 win. You know, they had that really awful performance against Denver on TNT. Like, I mean, has there been one game where you can say, that's about what I thought they would be? I mean, they did play the Boston Celtics, but they, like all teams, the buzzsaw that is the Green People, they lost by 9.
It's like I said, it's just there are players with no positions, but they just haven't found they don't have teamwork yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's no unit cohesiveness there. But give them time. But just quickly mentioning New Orleans, fun to watch.
Well, when you have a two-man game. And, I mean, you see this with Irving. Well, it's different because it's a point guard and a power forward. I keep bringing everything back to the Celtics because they're the bee's knees. But, you know, they have a two-man game with Horford and Kyrie that has become literally unstoppable on the roll. When AD and DeMarcus Cousins run in, you could just start jogging back on the other side because they're going to get it. They're going to get either an alley-oop or they're going to get to the free throw line.
And it's just... You know, it's like, well, how could those two play together? But they look like they're having fun together.
Mm-hmm. Drew Holiday had that one big outburst against the Toronto Raptors where he had 34, but they still lost the game. Raptors gave him another loss right after that. That's another team that's been kind of slowly getting back into the thick of
it. Well, the thing with the Raptors is Norman Powell hasn't really done much.
Has an injury, so that's kind of been bothersome. DeLon, here's my worry about the Raptors, even though they are playing very well and they're getting play out of guys like Ananobi and Serge Ibaka has been looking pretty good. My worry is this: Kyle Lowry does not look the same. He finally had a good game against the Pelicans a few days ago, but his numbers, if you stare at them, are not very good.
Oh, his numbers have dropped off completely.
And they just lost DeLon Wright to a separated shoulder. So this is going to be one of those ones where if their point guard thing goes to the shits, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. That's my one worry. DeMar DeRozan has played great, though.
Oh, DeRozan has – he's improved
mm-hmm.
to – I don't know. He's only improved so much considering he's just going to be that mid-range player.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to ever have that three-point shot. But he's – it's not the DeMar and Kyle show. It's now just this is DeMar's team.
Yes, I agree.
And everybody else is just, you know, they don't... Toronto is just that boring team. They're not going to win sexy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to wow you.
And the Pelicans are kind of a sexy team. They just don't know what they're doing sometimes. But Boogie and Davis are so good that they'll figure out a way to get you. That's
well, in true New Orleans form, half their teams already, you know, they're the first team week one to have to get a hardship exception to get Josh Smith because they didn't have enough players.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and you know, all of a sudden you see, here's Etuan Moore playing. Here's, like, who is this guy? Why is he there? The real, just the sinkhole on that in your team is just Dante Cunningham.
No wings, no small forwards. I mean that was going to be the moment Solomon Hill went down. It's not like Solomon Hill is exactly like, like a winner. He was maligned last year after signing a contract to go there, but that was your best small forward. Now you got to rely on Dante Cunningham. You got to rely on Darius Miller, the corpse of Tony Allen. Like
Darius Miller has not been bad.
No, he's not, but he's not an NBA. He's not a starting NBA small forward. That's the problem.
But bench player like Shane Larkin, we mentioned, like, you know, like, where did he come from? All of a sudden, mm-hmm. You know, he's good for 15 minutes. He's not terrible.
The other one that's kind of similar to the Thunder in terms of making big moves to try to, like, shoot up the Western Conference popularity ladder. But things have sort of worked out for them differently is the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I'll say it differently from the Thunder in this way. The Thunder is a team that looks good when you stare at the stats, but when you look at the standings, they're a game under 500. It seems like they have a lot more to fight for to get to where they need to get to. With the Timberwolves, statistically, they look kind of bad. Like, their defense is awful. They don't take any threes. Their field goal percentage is okay, but not great. But they're winning games. Like, they're 10-5 right now. Like, what do you think? When you look at Minnesota, what do you see?
Minnesota, I worry for them.
Okay.
They are the team we thought they would be in the win column.
They're the Chicago Bears. They are who we thought they were.
Yeah, you know, Towns is destroying it. We knew, you know, Wiggins would take a hit with a number. Mm-hmm. You know, his numbers would go down. Like, everyone's like, oh, well, Jimmy Butler, he's not shooting. Well, he was the team in Chicago. All of a sudden now, you need to defer to Wiggins a bit. You need to defer to Jeff Teague a bit.
Yeah, but this is the thing. 40% shooting and 34% from three is alarming for an all-star caliber player. That is alarming. For Jimmy, but that's Jimmy Butler I'm talking about.
It's alarming, but he's also taking far less shots than he's used to.
Yeah.
So I think it's a more, if I'm not mistaken, I think Wiggins and Towns are both taking more shots than maybe Teague is as well.
Wiggins is averaging 15 attempts, Towns averaging 14.7. Butler's at 13 and Teague is at 11. The next one after that is 7.7 by Taj Gibson. I mean, they're taking all the shots. They're a rec ball team, pretty much.
Yeah, that you know, okay, he's being the I'm not the leader guy. Let me just try to fit in. I'm kind of worried about Tibbs and let's play all these guys way too much.
That's his mantra. You know, Bielica, you'll see him every now and then. You know, Gorgui Dieng, even though he's got a finger issue, he'll play too. You know,
I'm a defensive guru.
Yeah.
My teams can't play defense. Even with I bring in half my players from Chicago, we still don't know how to play defense. It's just like, I don't know.
Do you think maybe the Thunder just did a better job of incorporating George to be the linchpin defensively so that they could keep their defense strong, whereas they just assume that Butler in Minnesota would just improve their awful defense and one guy cannot do that if you're not committed to the culture. Is that what it kind of is?
Well, with Minnesota, it's safe to say Andrew Wiggins is not the defensive guy we thought he would be.
No, I would actually call him a bad defensive player.
In Kansas, he looked like somebody who could become a good defender.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's raw, but he seems to have everything there. It's just nope.
It's just become this thing where you just immediately look at like those 6'8", 6'7", small forwards with the long wingspans and just automatically think, oh, defensive guy. Like Anunoby in Toronto is like an example. Oh, he's a defensive guy. Look at these long arms. He's not a good shooter, but he might be able to be a stopper. You know, but for Wiggins, like that's not how it works. You got to learn how to play defense in the NBA. You know,
you have to learn. You have to want to learn. And I'm not sure about the second part with him, but Minnesota, it's just, well, what did we expect? Well, we expected them to be a top four team in the West. It's like, well,
that's fair.
What did we just put them in a top four on paper? Really? And all of a sudden, well, where are they now? Oh, they're top four. Well, that's, well, what else can you ask for? Sort of.
I worry about them. Like you said, with the sustainability, that's my issue. Not only with the health, because you're relying on, you know, so few guys to just play all the minutes. And if one of them goes down, it could really fall apart. With the Thunder, I do think they have a little bit of depth, you know, not a lot more than Philly does, for sure. But
well, another thing that worries me about Minnesota, Shabazz Muhammad.
Okay.
He was there. He got a ton of minutes. All of a sudden, now you're on the bench. You're getting 10 minutes a game. It's like, well, he knows the system. He knows everything. There's no reason for him not to be spelling both Wiggins and Butler.
Just a little too much change I mean, do you think there's such a thing as that, just a little too much? I mean, it's so ironic because here we go again with the Boston Celtics. Like, look at all the change they went through, and they're working out just fine.
He's a wizard.
Okay, just a couple of notes here that we've been missing over the last couple of weeks since we last convened. D'Angelo Russell's knee injury. The Nets are still winning a game here, winning a game there. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has really taken a leap. But, I mean, how can they do without Russell?
It's one of those, it's a shame. Lynn went down. Oh man, that was, sad, but okay. Russell went down. Well, that's sad. Oh, then all of a sudden Spencer Dinwiddie is scoring 20 points a game. It's like, what?
Yeah. He had 25 against the Jazz.
Yeah. And it's just, well, we still know they're bad. It's just, they're very competitive and they're developing winning cultures and not winning cultures, developing winning attitudes. Until they start getting veterans in who show them, how to win. But you're going to lose, but they're playing hard every night. It's not like Atlanta or Chicago where it's just, they're bad.
Mike Conley is going to be out indefinitely at least two more weeks because he's got another issue with his Achilles tendon. He had the same issue last year where it was sore and he missed out a lot. Actually, I'm taking that back. I think that happened at the end of the 2016 season, right before the playoffs, and he wound up having to sit out the playoffs because of the Achilles problem. Since then, the Grizzlies have lost four in a row. Is it just basically that simple? If Conley doesn't play, the Grizzlies are toast.
Well, you said it. It's the Mark and Mike show.
It is. I mean, Marcus Gasol and Mike Conley are the team. I know they got other guys like the ghost. Somehow they resurrected Tyreke Evans. I don't know how that happened. Can you explain that to me really quickly?
I don't know. It is a mystery. However, it's good to see the ghost of Ben McLemore is still missing.
Mm-hmm. They got a couple ghosts in there that are just kind of creeping while the other ones are just lying in wait.
Tyreke, well, again, that's another team. Well, Vince Carter and Tony Allen were your three, and all of a sudden you need to fill that void somewhere. Let's get him in. And
bring a young guy in like Dylan Brooks, and he's played okay.
It seems to be a fit. It's just, as Conley goes, your team goes. There's nothing you can do when you put in, I can't even think of the name of their backup, Mario Chalmers.
Mm-hmm.
You bring Chalmers in, well, that team is now a slower team than they were before. They don't have the explosiveness, they don't have the shot, and your wins go out the window very fast.
Yeah, well, now two of those were against is it fair to call the Rockets a juggernaut, or is it too early?
It's they're another team. We expected them to be that.
When Harden starts having the 30/40-point games, and Paul came back in that Suns game where they scored the 145 points or whatever, but when Harden's going, it's hard to beat them because they just run the crap out of that pick and roll, and then you got Paul with the mid-range stuff and Capella on the rolls to the basket and all the threes that they take with Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, just a lot of offensive firepower. If they even play solid on defense, you can't beat them unless you're like a super elite team.
Well, and that's what's going to come down to in the latter stages is Harden feeling playing defense.
Exactly. The other small things, John Lewis, we talked about the Pistons playing great, but they're doing it without John Lewis because he's got some ankle issues. The Bucks made a trade to get Eric Bledsoe. You mentioned Greg Monroe and Phoenix. We didn't talk about the other side of it. They've been 4-1 since. Do you feel like – I got to tell you this. I think that's more of timing. I don't think that was Eric Bledsoe coming in immediately making them better. I felt like they were sort of getting there, but they – but they needed just that little bit to make them better. I don't know if Eric Bledsoe is the reason why they've gotten much better. I feel like the timing was just right.
I don't want to say it's the reason they've gotten better, but it's not having Giannis being the point guard and having Brogdon, who, he's still doing his thing.
He could be a defensive too, though, like a Patrick Beverley type.
You have Brogdon and Middleton, and then Giannis and Thonmaker or whoever they have at the five.
Whatever it is.
Their rotating center who seems
to... Is Spencer Hawes still on the team?
No. He got amnestied.
He did. Okay.
But it's just, you have a player, you gave all that money to Dellavedova, who can't be the starting point guard.
He's got knee issues too, so is Teletovic. Yeah.
So it's, well, you got a player who can fit and who can actually play, and a point guard who can make Giannis more explosive by being that guy who could push it up the court as well. So, yeah, it's a matter of timing, and it's a matter of fit. And
where are we on our Giannis Porzingis train? Is it still choo-chooing pretty strong?
The Giannis train is still head full of steam. Porzingis.
It's at a cross. They're at a cross. Like, they're gunning pretty fast, but they got to slow down for just a second. You know, we had a couple of Porzingis games where he didn't shoot the ball too well. Defensively, the team just decided, okay, we're going to try to stop him and only him. They've had a lot of really nice wins, but my fear with the Knicks is that if you look the schedule, the teams that they've beaten have not exactly been super impressive. I know that.
Oh, yeah, they've Wade been Jr. terrible. They're still a terrible team.
Let's look at the teams they've beaten since the Cleveland win on October 29th, and Denver, which is a good one. Phoenix, Indiana, Charlotte, Sacramento, Utah. Utah might be okay. I don't know how good they really are yet. They're a mystery to me. But the rest of them, meh. I mean, I feel maybe I'm trying to like pigeonhole it, but I don't feel like they've played too many good teams. But when Porzingis plays well, the Knicks win. When he plays poorly most of the time, the Knicks lose. That's as simple.
And that's the thing. I've had to find myself defending my criticism of Porzingis. It's like, well, he's so much better. Yeah, but on the nights where he scores 35 points on 35 shots, it's, you know, we know you're just giving him the ball, but he definitely has embraced being the man. And who is it? Their prize signing Hardaway. He hasn't been terrible. He's been nice and complimentary.
He had a 28-point game against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then he had the 26-point game against the Magic. The problem is they lost both of those games. That's actually a good kind of flip. There's two teams that have struggled lately that started out hot. And I just want to ask you if you feel like if there's like a trajectory that you see here, whether it be one way or the other. Let's start with the Orlando Magic, who's sort of fallen backwards. How do you feel about them? Do you feel like they can kind of stay at 500, which is where they're at right now, or do you feel like the truth is going to come out?
Oh, eventually, you know, we knew Orlando was going to come back to reality. It's just, well, Gordon, okay, now he's a max player. You've gotten rid of that.
I think Elfrid Payton's got to go. I feel like you just got to trade him now. He just doesn't fit.
There's nobody who needs him.
I know, but get something. I mean, just play DJ Augustin. Who cares?
There's nothing they could get. They would need another point guard, and it's just, you know, on paper that team always should be better than they are, especially with that payroll. It's just, yeah, Payton is just not as good as Hennigan thought he was.
They're getting a lot of good shooting out of guys like, you know, Evan Fournier, Jonathan Simmons, even Augustin, who's shot the ball well. And then we already talked about Aaron Gordon, how he's really blossomed this year. I don't want to just pin it on one guy. You know, Jonathan Isaac has had some injury issues too, so he's been sitting out some games. I'm not sure. I feel like the Magic could still start winning games again. Like, I don't think that was just an outlier, but the Clippers worry me. Like, that's one where I feel like, uh-oh. This is what I kind of thought would happen to them if they started to lose games. The Patrick Beverley injury is a big deal, and he'll be back very soon. But
you lose him and
you lost Milos Teodosic very early in the season.
Yeah, so you're down to Austin Rivers again, which it seems the.
We're not trying to laugh at Austin Rivers. I mean, he's not that bad of a player. It's just
the Clippers season always somehow goes in. Well, you're down to Austin Rivers. That's all you got.
Lou, he has his games. Like, didn't he have this one where he went bananas? I'm trying to remember what team it was if I could catch it here. But, you know, Lou Williams is just one of those guys he can just explode. And then there's
that's what he is. He's just a backup point guard who's just going to I'm just going to shoot threes.
Yeah, it was 31 against the Sixers.
I'll shoot 15 shots a game. Don't worry about me. And it's just, you know, it's coaching at this point.
Just a couple small notes. The Portland's been okay. They've been playing good defense. The Jazz, I just can't figure them out. I want to kind of take more time on another show to talk about Utah because I just don't feel like I have enough data on them. You know, I'm not trying to be like a stat head, but I just don't feel like with the Jazz, I see enough yet. I mean, do you feel like you've seen enough?
And that's why 15 games isn't too, you know, that's why you need 25 or 30 to fully judge.
I mean, like, I see numbers like Rodney Hood and Donovan Mitchell first and second in scoring, and I know that's not going to last. I see Ricky Rubio making some shots, and I know that's not going to last, you know, like, but then you see some numbers like Derek Favors are pedestrian, but you know he's going to have a couple of good games in a row, and Rudy Gobert's missed a few games. It just doesn't, I don't feel like I have enough. Denver has sort of, I think Denver is, like, legit good. Like, I feel like they've sort of settled back to what they are, and what they are is a very good team.
With them, who knows still? Like, it's just...
Let me say this. I don't think they're as big of a mystery to me as the Utah Jazz are.
Well, Millsap's fitting in, finally. It's just, what are we getting from all these young kids? Every day there seems to be another one random one who seems to be stepping up. It's just...
And Jamal Murray is like a fantasy nightmare because he'll either get you no points on 0 of 10 shooting or he'll go for 30.
Yeah, and that's... It's just consistency is Denver's.
Yeah. I mean, Gary Harris, too, just got all that money paid. And Moutier is actually shooting the ball well, which is unbelievable. You know that like I he's at 43% shooting and 46 from the 3-point line. If you're an Emmanuel Mudiay fan, you're ecstatic. What was his numbers before that in the 30s?
Yeah,
it was awful. I mean, outside of that, I don't really have too much more to add. I feel like we've sort of hit a lot of the notes that we needed to hit on, unless there was something that really was just like aching at you, like the Adam Silver trying to end the one-and-done rule crusade that is continuing. And
well, here's the thing about that. We made the case with Ben Simmons. And then let's just look at this year's high school class, or upcoming. Bruce Bowen would put his name in the draft. He got $100,000 from Louisville, so he has
Brian,
to be
Brian
right.
Bowen. Brian Bowen.
Brian Bowen. I blew that one quickly. Yeah, Bowen, you have a lot of these high school kids who are going to put their names in again, and they're just going to be G League players. Mm-hmm. So we mentioned, you know, in the NCAA preview, there's like 5-6 good players up top, but then it's just a lot of crappy players, and a lot of the crappy players don't know they're crappy.
Well, the other thing, too, is that Silver's looking at it, too, from a bottom-line standpoint, like any very smart league commissioner would, not Roger Goodell, and say that, hey, you know, if I can strengthen this G League that we're putting a lot more money into by rebranding it and sponsoring it, and we have every team is going to have a representative G League affiliate by year's end, then what we need to do is we can try to strengthen it by getting more star power in there. And the way to do that is to have players get drafted out of high school, but they don't necessarily have to be immediately, you know, sent to the top. And they can just learn in the G League, and that'll strengthen our brand there. Which I don't want to say the G League is a non-existent brand, but let's be honest. How many? If you're a casual fan, how many G League teams can you name off at the top of your head? Probably none. You know, you and I can because we're junkies for the NBA. But like, how do you feel about that?
It's probably going to go to. There's going to be, you know, rookies will all have to be in the G League.
Or do you think that the GMs are just going to be super duper impatient like they always are in the NBA, and they're going to take these rookies on these first round contracts and say, okay, we got to get something out of them now. Let's start playing them now. We need them to play now. Like, there's going to be that urgency to do
history
that.
Had shown, you know, all those high school kids, how many panned out for the teams that drafted them?
About 30%.
A lot of them had to move on to other teams, and, you know, you could say, well, would they have had these careers were they in college? But at the same time, it's just, you know, Lou Williams didn't do anything for years, and you have, you know, Martell Webster and
Outlaw. That's a discussion for the show we've had years before. If you look back to the archives, that, you know, guards, I mean, Kobe started it in 96 where guards coming out of high school was just not normal. And, you know, even after Kobe, there was a long stretch there where you didn't see a lot of guards come out and into the NBA draft until – unless they were, like, super-duper athletic. Like, back in the day, Deshaun Stevenson was like, a great athlete. So was Sean Livingston before he – his knee broke in half, if you remember that injury. But it just never happened. And so – but now you're seeing a lot of guys where, you know, guards – I think guards will come out of high school in no time, especially well, now in a league like now.
Now if there's so many freshmen who are just as bad, it's like, well, you could just come out of high school.
Yeah.
You went to college for, you know, 1 year. You didn't improve anything. We're, you know, we're picking you out of here, you know, the Diamond Stones, the Steven Zimmermans, the, you know, what's the point of, you know, we probably would have picked you.
And then the idea of having them play 2 years, you know what? Not the worst idea. Like, some of these guys, when they go there, you're just like, you're not ready. You're not ready. And then there's some – the only trouble I have with it is that I think it can backfire on the NCAA teams because of the fact that just as a small aside, this. If you get them to commit to at least two seasons removed from a high school in the NCAA before you can be eligible for the draft if you don't come out of high school, my problem with it is this, is that I think that there is a realistic chance that a lot of those sophomores will have a lot of trouble being academically eligible for the following semesters. Because instead of having to just go through one semester and a half, now you have to go through three of them. And I don't know if some of those players or student athletes would actually be willing to go through that entire process.
Yeah, that's what it'll be. Well, you know, they can. It'll be they're allowed to join the G League now. They can, or they could go overseas.
But that's the problem with the G League, though, Adam. There's no buzz. There's no I can't wait to see the Fort Wayne Mad Ants and go watch this hot prospect. You know, I'm sure their attendance is higher. I've seen some statistics about Summer League, where Summer League's attendance was sky high in Las Vegas. Did you hear the story about Orlando losing the Summer League? And that they're going to move it to Las Vegas so that they can boost attendance?
No.
That just got announced recently, that they're going to get out of the hot box in Orlando, Orlando's practice facility, and they're going to move that one to Vegas too.
So they're going to have two separate summer leagues?
I guess
so.
Or like, yeah, like the Pavilion or and then the Thomas and Mac or whatever they do. You know, but basically, they saw that the numbers were going up revenue-wise with Summer League because and it's not crazy, Adam. It's because the top prospects are there. Why do you think everyone goes to the McDonald's All-American game? Why do you think everybody is jumping through hoops to get tickets to the Jordan Brand Classic? Because they want to see the prospects. They want to see the top guys. Nobody wants to see – with all due respect to my guy Steve Willie, nobody wants to watch Xavier Munford, you know? I mean, who plays for the Bucks affiliate. He did go to the game. I got to ask him how it went. He asked me, what kind of players are good from the Bucks affiliate, which the name escapes me. And I was looking at him like, I don't know. I don't see any good ones. Maybe Sterling Brown, and you know.
Oh, they're like the Lakewood or something.
Yeah, it's somewhere in Wisconsin.
They are the new franchise. They were just built and
– mm-hmm.
And more than just outside Madison or something.
But basically what it is that you need the buzz. And Adam Silver ain't stupid. Like, and here's the thing though, there's no promise. Like, if you're a year removed from high school, you can only play in the G League. No, you're going to have an NBA contract. You will be a first round draft pick if you come out. If Marvin Bagley came out, he would have been top five. He would be a rookie. He'd probably be playing right now. Limited minutes because he's so young, but he'd be playing right now.
Yeah, but okay, you could say about him, but what about Mitchell Robinson, who would also be a high pick?
I think he'd be playing. I think he would have been picked if he had actually come out.
They'd all be picked, but again, they'd start, you know, not all of them are ready, not all of them, a lot of them start faltering fast.
Oh, like the realization of like, you're not as good as you thought you were kind of thing, yeah.
It's like, look at Bruno Caboclo, look at James Young, wherever D-League, you know, you had all these players.
I'll give you another one. Look at Marquise Bolden, who plays at Duke. Can you imagine if he came out, if he was eligible? He would have been cut by now.
And that's the thing, is you have a lot of these high school kids who would have been cut after 1 year. So you have a 19-year-old kid who
out of an NBA job, the G League has filled up with you know, the G League is, it's, there's two tiers. There's the one that the team wants, and there's just assorted bums.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So you're just sort of floating around now.
And then you have the super rare injury assignment players. Like, I think Tony Parker was there in San Antonio, but I don't think he played. And then Brandon Jennings had a stint. And then you have the other tier, which is the guys that look like bums, but then they wind up going to the NBA, getting called up, and they become stars. Guys like Danny Green and Yogi Ferrell and Jonathan Simmons, you don't see them a lot. That's rare.
You don't see them a lot, but because now with these two-way contracts, you'll see it even less because, you know, for the Celtics, you have Kadeem Allen and Jabari Bird, your two-way players, so they're the ones, hey, we want to sort of develop these guys. So you have somebody like LJ Peak, you know, from Georgetown, who's sitting there,
mm-hmm.
who's like, well, I came out early. I'm sitting here in Maine. I'm not getting crap. I made a mistake.
But what are you going to do? Go to Europe? I mean, good luck with that.
Now, that's what happens is just you have, you know, players who are going to come out of high school. And it's just, you're going to be back to the stories of just younger players out of jobs earlier.
And then go to the summer and play TBT, and hopefully maybe people watch you on the basketball tournament. Yeah. Or play Big Three basketball. That ain't going to work out either. You know. How did that work out with Big Three basketball?
I believe it was a success.
Okay.
There was a lot of hype around it. I don't see why it wouldn't be back.
Okay. And then you were talking about your team of the future, the Boston Celtics. Are you a little bit wary of the – this will finish the show since we started with them. Are you a little weary of the – these guys are going to win – are going to be the champions in the next few years talk?
That's the next few years. It's always there's nothing – there's nothing wrong with saying you'll be the next Spurs.
Do you feel like it's just generous hyperbole that these opponents like to give these teams as, like, fluff quotes, and then in secret they're like, we're just trying to pump them up so that we can bring them back down?
I don't think it's fluff quotes. I think it's just sort of, they're going to be up there for a while. They might not be the champions because, you know, look at the Lakers Bulls era, the 90s. Yeah, there was always the Utah Jazz. Well, that's going to be a tough out every year.
Yeah. I don't know if Cleveland's made a mistake yet. That's when I mean, I don't know if we're there yet with that deal. I mean, because Isaiah Thomas hasn't played a minute. I mean, that, once that happens, then we can really look at it.
No, they should be back. They should be the conference champions again this year.
They've won four in a row. LeBron looks fantastic. The fact that no one's talking about LeBron as MVP is just fucking ridiculous to me. He's averaging like 27, 8, and 7. It's like some ridiculous number.
Yeah, but we expect that out of him. And the problem with that is you have somebody like Harden who's putting up 40
yeah.
like every other game.
He's averaging like 30, like 6 and 8 or 11, something like some ridiculous number. So, and I think that's probably going to be finishing up this episode. I felt like we got a lot of traction out of this one to catch everything up. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Ian Gerish. That sounds really terrific. I'm Ian Gerish. See you later, guys. Take care.